Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another exciting episode of Discussions with Delia Farquharson. Delia is a licensed social worker and experienced life coach, dedicated to helping you achieve your goals and become your better self. She specializes in helping others identify the connections between your thoughts, feelings, and actions. Welcome, Delia.
Good evening, and thank you for joining us for another episode of Discussions with Delia. It's been a while. It's been about 3 weeks since we've hosted a show, and it's really good to be here. Lots of things have happened since the show came on, has been on, and, you know, so there's tons to talk about. But what's been most in the news is perhaps Ferguson and what's happened in New York with Eric Garner and the grand jury decision. So I thought, you know, that our last show kind of talked a little bit about that. And in going through what's been happening with these grand jury decisions, it seems like there's a tremendous amount of fear. And I thought dedicating a program to this discussion would be helpful. Now, my guest co-host is not here today, but I have a wonderful, awesome guest with us this evening, and that is Ms. Gina Parker Collins. Gina, are you there?
Yes, good evening, Delia. How are you?
I'm very well. How are you?
Fantastic. Thank you.
I'm so happy that you're able to be on the program this evening, and I'm sure this is going to be the first of many appearances are, you know, for you on this show, I hope. But I wanted to give you the opportunity to just take a couple minutes to introduce yourself and to introduce what you do, because I'm so very proud of the work that you do, and I'd like you to share that, if you would, please.
Oh, certainly. But first, I must thank you, Delia, for you and Raymond for providing a social and emotional forum for us to learn from, to be supported by. So I thank you, and I'm very honored to have you, Delia, as RISE's social and emotional advisor. So who is RISE? What is RISE? RISE stands for Resources in Independent School Education. And I'm the founder of the organization, but, you know, I think more importantly, I'm a mom. I'm a mom of a young black boy and a young black girl. I am a parent advocate for school choice. And thank you for giving me the title of change maker. I'm honored to hold that position. But what RISE does essentially is, you know, we're simply a lifestyle organization that builds bridges between families of color and the culture of private independent schools. So we talk about private independent schools bringing about greater awareness in communities of color, as well as the opportunity to apply and enroll and have well-balanced retention as we navigate some very elite, predominantly white educational settings. And we bring our stories to the table to encourage recruitment, as well as well-balanced retention. We have 9 member schools to date. We're growing, and we're a network of families of color, as well as schools, our schools. And that's basically it. We have a digital component, and we have a live component, and we're having a really good time around education.
Oh, awesome. Awesome, Gina. Thanks so much for doing that. You did such an awesome job. Now, let's kind of, Gina, for the next 25 minutes or so, talk about what's, I think, been on your mind and my mind, you know, in our capacity both as parents of children of color, but also in our, you know, professional capacities as well, you know, thinking about what's been going on, what's gone on in Ferguson, what's gone on here in New York and Staten Island with the grand jury. And the sad truth is it's not new, but these two incidents is happening so close to each other, and with the intensity that's been surrounding them, has just really kind of ignited something in our society. So let's talk a little bit about, you know, how you're feeling about it and how what you're thinking as you deal with your children, your own children, mm-hmm. around this issue.
Well, you're right. I mean, it is nothing new. I mean, a name that comes to mind as I was growing up is Amadou Diallo, and there's Sean Bell, and there's so many mm-hmm. names. I think mm-hmm. I recently saw a T-shirt that a peer of mine was wearing that had the list of names. So, yes, it's nothing new, but I guess really it started for me and my awareness as it relates to my son, with Trayvon, because my son was aware of it. He was watching the media and was very affected by the outcome. And then fast forward, these two most recent incidents, really three, there's another one, and the young boy by the last name of Rice. So, you know, my son is aware. He's 11 years old. His response has been, another one, you know, and I'm scared.
Right.
My son,
and I think,
mm-hmm.
Go ahead, Gina.
Yeah, and he's a sports kid, you know, my son. I just got finished watching this video segment about sons and black boys and what they should be wearing and what they shouldn't be wearing. And my son has a mixed bag of clothes to wear. You know, he has an expensive wardrobe. He has his, you know, sometimes his preppy look, certainly his formal look, and his sport look, which he, you know, he's a sports kid. So he loves hoodies. I love hoodies. They're so comfortable and warm, but I often have to say to him, take it off. But I certainly can't change, and I don't think I want to change his whole wardrobe, but it pains me, it pains him. We are looking at a protest recently, getting ready to attend one. He was very excited about being part of the process, but then also shared that he was scared, you know.
Right.
So it's a lot of social and emotional conversations going on in his head that I'm sure he's not even able to articulate.
Right.
And it's my job as a parent to engage him in conversations that allows him to understand, you know, where we are and where he can be moving forward.
Right. And I think, Gina, that's a good segue into, you know, the fear, because I think that's what I hear. My daughter has as well participated, and she's in high school, but she's participated in some of the demonstrations and in her school in some of the activities surrounding, you know, these events. And that's what I hear, I think, most, is this fear that is dominant in, I'm going to say that the fear seems to be more dominant in the boys than in the girls. And I don't understand, you know, that's what I'm hearing, is that while girls feel like, you know, they can righteously protest and put themselves out there, it seems like boys, even though they want to and they're just as outraged, are more hesitant and more fearful of being a part of the demonstration and being a part of the protest. Do you get that sense, Gina?
Yeah, no, absolutely. Interestingly enough, as part of sharing our stories with the RISE community, our network, we've been speaking to parents. We've been speaking to students about their leadership roles and their proactive nature as a result of the non-indictments, you know, leading school walkouts and being part of protests. But there was one story I recount where the boys were part of the conversation, the black boys and brown boys were part of the conversation to stand up and be counted and show that their lives mattered. So they were engaging in those conversations, but when it came time to the protest itself on a school campus, the boys didn't show up. Many of them didn't show up. And you're right, it's the fear of being, I don't know, it's taking it to that next step. What are the retributions? What are the retributions of my standing up for myself, of my, you know, now becoming a target again? you know.
Right.
Whereas girls, you know, my daughter as well has participated. And her fear is different. You know, her fear is that her peers won't understand. They'll say, oh, you know, get over it. It's, I don't know why, you know, it happened. Let's move forward. And she's really afraid that the peers that she's gone to school with since kindergarten just truly don't know who she is or don't care enough to know her experience in having that matter.
Right, right. So, yeah, so, Dad, you're right. There are two different kinds of fear. But how do we help our children? Because you're right. I think many of them are experiencing fear. Like you said, they're probably not showing up, but they're probably not able to express it as well, right? So they're not able to articulate, especially if they're younger and don't really have the language skills. So, you know, one school of thought may be to protect younger children as much as possible from, you know, being exposed to what's going on in the media, to, you know, being exposed to what's happening on television, because it can be frightening. You know, seeing all the demonstrations and all these people can be frightening for a young child especially. So I think that as much as possible, trying to guard them, you know, for the elementary school children, to guard them as much as you can, from being exposed to too much of it without first being prepared and having a full understanding and an explanation. That would be, you know, that would be my guidance there, as much as possible.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, being...
Mm-hmm. Go ahead. No, go ahead, Gina.
No, you mentioned being guarded. I think there's age-appropriate mm-hmm. levels of conversations to be had. You know, one I would say is be careful of how much media we are allowing our children to watch and be exposed to. Putting things into context, choosing the type of media that we put them in front of that can begin to engage them, us as a family, in these very important racial, social, class conversations, police brutality conversation. So just this morning, we were out last night for a holiday event, and Chaz brought home a video that he missed watching with his class because of a doctor's appointment he had. But long story short, it was called The Children's March. It's a documentary that you can catch on Vimeo. They were discussing it in the class, and it's about Birmingham, Alabama, and the children becoming the catalyst that pushed, you know, desegregation over the edge. And so we heard children's voices, children's stories about their what their end goal was, because they were aware of what was happening with the injustices, the social and racial injustices. However, they were willing to stand up and be empowered by their voice to make a change, a monumental change. So watching that was empowering for him. It was empowering and gave us also the language and the tools to extend the conversation as it relates to today's issues. So,
right.
You know, choosing to share. Mm-hmm.
Choosing to share, you said. Go ahead.
Yes, choosing to share that with our children, you know, making the choice of what we're going to share is very important in extending the conversation to, you know, allay the fears and show that, yeah, there's fear, but what's the alternative and what is the power in action and expressing your deepest thoughts?
Right. You know, I think that, you're absolutely right, that children have played a significant role in kind of mobilizing and moving, advancing, you know, protests, especially in the African-American experience. You know, that's, I mean, recorded in our history. You're absolutely right. But when we enter the conversation in terms of these particular set of circumstances, you know, and I think it's about, you know, understanding differences. I was reading an article in the New York Times where a reporter from the New York Times, you know, she talked about her, and I don't remember her name, but she talked about how her son asked her, can police officers be arrested? because somehow this 7-year-old had come into the knowledge of someone named Michael Brown being killed, or Mike Brown being killed, even though she had tried to protect him. And so he asked, can police officers be arrested? And, you know, it forced her, because this parent had chosen to try to guard her child, to have this difficult conversation about, you know, the laws of the land and, you know, and what's going on, what happened with Michael Brown. But the reality is that us having a conversation with our children, and particularly our black and brown boys, about what to expect when they encounter police. The sad reality is that these are conversations that must be had, because the experience will be different. And the likelihood that black and brown boys will encounter these difficult experiences with police is high, is great. You know, because not even Dante is protected, and his father is the mayor of New York City, right?
Yes.
They've had to have that conversation with him too. So how do you have that conversation with your child? And when do you choose to have that conversation with your child about how to conduct yourself if you're approached by the police? Right? Go ahead.
Yeah. I think my conversation with my 11-year-old, I think happened at an appropriate time. He's, you know, he's out walking a dog early in the morning, you know, with the winter, you know, kind of after, you know, nightfall, because the time has changed and, you know, the season. And he walked out with his coat and his hoodie. He loves his hoodie. And so beginning to have those conversations as early as possible, when we feel like we're, you know, our children are somewhat being or exercising their rights to just being on their own and having some sort of self-responsibility, makes us have these conversations a lot sooner. And they're not easy conversations to have, and how do we have them? And I think they're always appropriate moments. They're opportune moments to dive in. And I think for my son, again, with his hoodie on, we're going into the fall season, dropping my daughter off at her bar and bat mitzvah in the city, and we're walking arm in arm together, just biding the time until we pick her up. And I remember my son saying to me, "Mom, did you see that cop look at me?" I'm like, what are you talking about? We're in the meatpacking district. There's a lot going on, and I don't see a cop passing my way on foot, you know. And he said, no, he was in the car. He was in the patrol car. Now, my father was a cop, so he's aware of, you know, he's aware of Papa being a cop. So he has high expectations of what a cop is supposed to do. And I said, no, I didn't see him. And he said, he kind of looked at me really, it made me feel very uncomfortable. But wow, we're walking arm in arm, and yeah, he might have a hoodie on, but it's clear that this is a child, and he's with his mother, and he felt the glare. So we had to have those conversations, you know.
Right.
Be careful what you say, you know. It's yes, sir. What you wear, it's the whole gamut, and it's an unfortunate conversation, because we want our children's spirit to soar and them to feel very confident, but yet and still we are doing what we have done for years, and I dare say centuries, to protect our children of color. You know, be quiet.
Right.
Only spoke when spoken to. Watch what you say. No eye contact. Yes, sir. No, sir. And, it really harkens a past that's very painful for us. But it's really, what is it about? Survival. It's about survival.
It is. It is about survival. You know, I mean, and you're right that, you know, the time, the appropriate time, differs for everybody. Right? Differs for every family, for every child. So there is no right time. It's only right for you. But having that conversation of where do you put your hands, and how do you handle your hands, and, you know, all this kinds of things, it's heartbreaking for you to have that conversation with an 11-year-old. But when you think about Tamir, who was 12 and who was just killed by the police for having a toy gun, then you realize that, you have to prepare yourself.
Yes. Yes.
You know, you have
Absolutely.
To prepare that. Right. Yeah. So Gina, you know, as we think about it, and as we think about the steps that you go through, you know, I talked before a little bit about the younger children and trying to protect them as much as possible and trying to shield them as much as possible, as much as you can. I mean, you know, some children, unfortunately, you know, have not been shielded. And so that conversation or that knowledge comes to them earlier. But for middle school students, which is where your son is, right, just about?
Just about, yes.
You know, it's really important to listen to what their fears are, I would say, and I'm sure, I know that's what you do, you know, that you're having a conversation. But in kind of guiding parents and, you know, as we talk about this, it's really trying to understand what the child is thinking and feeling, what's going on, what's it actually like.
Yes. And that's listening. That's listening. So I asked my older child who's about to leave middle school and go into high school, upper school, you know, what is it that you want at your age level parents to do? How do you want us to engage you in conversations about something that you are absolutely aware of? You know, you have your own access to media. You have your access to what's happening in your schools and the conversations that you're having. How can we support you as parents? And her response was, listen, just listen first. Because, again, you know, depending on the age, you know, we're going to rush into a conversation that's so complex and has such a long history and a complex history. I think when you start talking about middle school and high school, we have to listen. We have to listen to what their concerns are, what they are doing on their own to be proactive. Many, many, countless stories. Matter of fact, tomorrow in our Rise newsletter, on the Rise newsletter, we have interviewed parents and students about the activity of our students in having a voice and how parents are supporting them. So we have a couple of stories that we're sharing with some best practices. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I think one of the best things that I heard from my daughter was to just listen when you start talking to our older children, hearing their ideas.
Yeah, I think that's really important. Communication, that's the, I think, the most essential part of communication is really listening. It's really about actively listening. But, you know, I want to just introduce this idea of the talk about differences. Because as you talk about your daughter, you're talking about how the experience that she's having, even as she's engaging in this subject, is that those around her don't understand or are not trying to understand what the experience is she's having. So I think a conversation about differences is really an important conversation to have with our children, that we will people will have difference of opinions, that people will have different approaches to problems and to situations, and even when we don't want to sometimes, we have to tolerate those differences. But encouraging a conversation around differences, I think, becomes really critical.
Oh, absolutely. And I will say, though, that there have you know, I think a pressure point for her is being so engaged and involved and wanting to share her story, wanting people to hear her story, and leaning into discomfort. Many of her classmates are not ready for it, but then there are those who are, and school administrators and faculty, and many of the independent schools, many of our member independent schools are really helping our children to engage in the conversation in a space that's complex in and of itself. You know, how polarizing is education when it comes to race?
Right.
And so these conversations for many of our schools are on the table, and it's just important that, you know, we are having them at home, and we are holding our schools accountable for helping have these conversations with our children. Particularly in private independent schools where it's a predominantly white, wealthy community. And so what better place that has the resources, absolutely has the resources, to bring in thought leaders like yourself to help engage around the social and emotional issues of race and class and police brutality.
Yeah,
and
I
then
think
it's not all policemen, because my dad and many, the majority of police officers, I believe, are really amazing folks who are doing courageous work. But it only takes a handful of those who aren't properly trained and aren't really ready for the job.
And I think that's why, too, Gina, that the response from the adults in the communities of color needs to be a tempered response. It cannot be a broad stroke response where we're saying all cops are bad and all, you know, it has to be a tempered response, because if we want our children to grow up with that sense of tolerance, outraged though we are, and rightly so, it cannot be that we're saying, because like you said, your father was a police officer and he was a good man. And so we must be careful in communicating to our children and in responding to these situations that we're doing so in a way that teaches that it must be tempered.
Absolutely. Tolerance all the way around, no matter what side of this issue you are on. And I hope all of us are on the side of humanity. But
right.
With humanity, there's tolerance and there's understanding. And I think this can, this really can turn out to be a very pivotal moment. I think about the last time I protested, it was for South Africa. I mean, our children are experiencing a time that hasn't happened for a long time, and they are part of this process, and we have to support
right.
them socially and emotionally.
Right. The thing is that they come back, because my daughter came back from the protest last week, and she said, "Mommy, there was so many people that her cell phone didn't work." I guess
wow.
The whole community said it was just so. It was so inspiring, and both my daughters went. One went with a camera and the other, to take pictures and to kind of experience from that through the lens. And the other one was really, leading, and one of the leaders from her school that went to represent. And it's really amazing to see the kind of sparks that's being lit in our children. And I know you're having the same experience. To see
yes.
them come alive around something that's bigger than themselves, and
mm-hmm.
really connecting that they can be, like I called you, a change agent, right?
Yes, they are. They are change agents. Yes, it's their opportunity to do so, and maybe even their responsibility as a parent. And I asked a question to some of our RISE Network parents. What was your gut feeling when your child's changemaker advocate said to you, "I'm going to lead a walkout at school. I'm going to go to the protest in Washington Square Park"? What was your gut feeling? Was it, as I heard in the Children's March documentary, some parents were like, "No, you're not going. You're staying right here." Others who said, "Really, God be with you. I'm proud of you.
Right.
And I'm here to support you." But then also balancing all of that with their day-to-day experience, they're gaining an education. You got to be focused at school. And, how much of this how do we balance empowering them to be an advocate and then at the same time not letting this consume them or make them feel really depressed when they are not getting the responses that they expect that they should have from their peers? Or
right,
when
right.
I hear another story, how do we keep that sadness, that fear, enough at bay that they can go on with life and be inspired and have hope? So, briefly I'll share with you that last evening my son...
Yeah, we have about 30 seconds.
Say that again. Are we running out of time?
Yeah. Go ahead.
Well, no, it's just that we have to just look for these opportunities where we can make our children feel safe and good, and they are out there. And so as much as we are supporting them to stand up for themselves and kind of go through the fire, we also have to provide comfort and opportunities that make them really feel good and safe.
Right. And that's a good place to end, Gina, because it really is true. It's about listening to our children and kind of supporting them as they develop into the independent beings that we want them to be. I just want to thank you, Gina. This has been a really inspiring conversation. And like I said, I hope it's going to be the first of many.
Oh,
all right.
Thank you so much, Julia. Thank you. Happy holidays.
All right. You take care.
Bye.
You too. Thanks so much.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye now.